Richard, thank you very much for actually inviting me to give this talk. Initially, was planned to be just another lecture that Richard and I give to our students on Monday evenings. This is a bigger room, slightly more formal, and I'm wearing a tie as well, so there isn't this formality normally. I was, first of all, going to thank the team, which was supposed to be here, half from Greece and half from London, three production companies, without which I would never have realized this project. I'll just mention their names, and they should be coming in the middle of the lecture at some point. Mice International PLC, which was the main production company, and its managing director, Jim Curley, and the creative director, John Young. Magic Limited, they were project managers, and Silver Apples Media, which masterminded the whole television strategy for the project. Now, being the LSE, and where AV equipment doesn't really work as it's planned, this is a very old version of a website that we designed for this project. Right. Now, I'll just briefly run through some very practical steps of the project. It stemmed from an analysis of the torch, Olympic torch relay. The Olympic torch relay begins in the ancient site of Olympia, travels half the world normally, depending on the funds that the Olympic Committee can give to the travel, and finally arrives in the host city. So in Athens, the torch relay is going to begin a year and a half before the opening ceremony, which is Friday the 13th of August, 2004, and it's going to go through, apparently through all five continents, that's the idea, and finally rest in Athens to, I guess, start the Olympic Games. So, I mean, very simply, and it's nothing. There's nothing original about this translation. I chose another 16 sites across Greece, some ancient sites, others more contemporary, and try to find an object, if you consider the Olympic flame as an object that stems from Olympia, try to find an appropriate object that would start a journey from that ancient site and arrive in Athens. Now, there is 16 objects in all, and that's because there's 17 nights in the Olympiad. So every single night, there will be an expected arrival somewhere from Greece of an object, which would arrive being carried by a procession. That's a general plan. So the idea started by a simple email that I sent to the Olympic Committee when I was in New York, and they initially told me why they were tempted by the idea, and that was because it solved huge problems for them. The main problem was that the Olympic Games is costing 2 billion euros. It's the biggest project that modern Greece has ever undertaken, probably ever will. It's a very pessimistic side of the story. And they're very conscious that Athens should not be the only city that should benefit. So they're constantly trying to find ways of spreading some of the investment, and I just call it an investment, and promoting other towns and cities across Greece. So the processions were seen as a way of asking all these towns and cities to participate. Processions are traveling festivals, and they would pass through all those towns and cities across Greece. The second reason was a temporal reason, a time frame, and they wanted from the beginning to question the fact that the cultural part of the Olympic Games is in an opening and closing ceremony as a show. And they wanted to spread that throughout the Olympiad, and they found that, you know, this was one of those projects that could do that for them. Now, the project was unfortunately rejected after 7 months of us working on it and traveling to Athens twice every month, and it was rejected apparently, and I emphasize apparently, because of budget cuts due to the September 11 attacks. That was a formal letter written to us. The good news is that last week, a choreographer by the name of Dimitris Papaioannou was commissioned as the artistic director of the cultural element of the Olympic Games. And this is an individual that I have a lot of respect for, and which I indirectly know, and I definitely know that he is very aware of the project as well. So there might be a relevance of this lecture. It might actually, there might be traces of it happening in a few years' time. Right, what I wanted them to do, this, I mean, if I just show you, normally every time I would pass through these icons, these are the objects, there's 17 of them. The object should come up on the screen, but unfortunately the system doesn't allow for flash to be played, so you have to do without it. So all of these objects correspond to a specific city, specific site in Greece. Now, what I want attempt to do is to go through every single one of the processions. Rather, I will try to make some sense of how this project tries to answer certain questions that have plagued Athens 2004, and indeed a great portion of the modern Greek identity. How do we relate to a history that is physically present in our back gardens? How do we make this history practical and meaningful in our everydayness? And above all, which is one of the main motives that this committee is trying to address, how do we show to the world, and I quote, a forward-looking Greece that is conscious of its past? They use that publicly every week in their press releases. I tried from a very early stage in the project to present appropriate temporal structures that incorporates the past, the present, and the forward-looking. The following two temporal structures were indeed the main driving forces behind the project, for they allowed us to find the appropriate mechanisms to make a practical and active past, to reactivate the past. The talk tonight is divided into two parts. Firstly, I will speak of these two temporal structures. Secondly, I would like to present three different aspects of processions. After all, the project is all about processions. And there will be three parts to that. I will read a procession as collection, a procession as embodiment of an oral tradition, and finally the procession as a metaphor. It will all come clear later on. I will conclude by speaking of the procession as an appropriate hermeneutical act in dealing with the past. And simply translated, the hermeneutical act might be of how do we understand the past? How do we make sense of it? It's very simple. So the first of these temporal structures that I'll present is called the time of delay. For those in the audience who have done business in Greece may well sympathize with this notion of time. We had to put up with it. The Olympic Games were awarded to Athens in September 1997, and work really only started 4 years later. Sorry, this is quite a good slide, this. Right, this is the current stage of the Olympic Village. It's supposed to be finished now. Currently, the Olympic Games face a delay of a few months. Projects have constantly been postponed or moved forward in time. In the contemporary workplace, this may be described as bringing forward, as we might do in meetings, for example. Canceling or postponing the present to a future date. The present, which we normally take for the moment of action, the ground of praxis, becomes slightly inactive. It is cancelled to a future date. What I want to emphasize in this condition of all is the condition of always catching up, of always being behind. It is a very particular temporal structure, and here we'd like to reverse a famous quote from Henri Bergson, that we do not necessarily close time behind us and open up space in front of us as we move on. In the time of delay, this is a small baptism that I've given to it, in the time of delay, we move forward, but are always a few steps behind of where we're supposed to be. and we're very conscious of that. I call this the hermeneutic step. You're supposed to be a few steps ahead, but are actively engaged in the past as you move forward. This is a metaphor for an active engagement in the past, where the horizons of the present step is fused with the idea of lagging behind. I think it's a very simple concept, and we all experience it, conscious of always slightly being behind. And my idea was that perhaps we can read this as a mechanism of walking in a historical ground. Just an idea. As we will see later, the project has deliberate infusions of delays. They are choreographed as such, so that there is a perception of this temporal structure. One of the desires of this project was to bring into visibility this concept of time, where the past is activated as a present situation. The past, however, is not made visible. The Cultural Committee of Athens 2004, I have a huge respect for, are a very intelligent bunch of people. They have critiqued endlessly previous identities that have been pasted to what a Greek identity might mean. This is Atlanta 1996. People dressed in nice white dresses, John McCullough's nude man. This is the kind of picture that they don't want to see. They want every single artist who's involved in this project to act a bit like translators. They think this is quite easy to do. You just open a book and just cut and paste. The second time structure that I would like to bring forward is a so-called Olympic time. This is not too dissimilar from Hans-Georg Gadamer's notion of time of the festival. 2 weeks ago, Athena and Phoebus, these guys that you see on the screen, were revealed. And perhaps they're a very good way of understanding the concept of Olympic time. Apparently, the designers were inspired by Xoana. Xoana are ancient Greek dolls, typically made of wood and of wax. They were mainly used as votive offerings for the dead. But on occasions, they would be used in processions, commemorating a specific god. Now, the Xoanon would only come into visibility once a year at the time of the festival, and then it would be hidden again. It's a bit like a Christmas tree, if it's a fake one. So you hide it and you expose it again. The cyclical process of coming into presence and into absence reveals a different kind of time. It is not historical time. Time is measured in returns. Again, similar to this time of, to the time of delay, we move forward, but with a heavy consciousness of the past. We move forward only by recalling our distance from a prior event. It is a form of spiral movement. 4 years, 4 years, 4 years. I mean, this is the Olympic time. It creates a rhythm rather than a linear progression. It keeps us rooted to the past, but yet we walk on. If I, perhaps we can go into the project, and if I can work this out. This is a video that we produced. The main emphasis on this video was to show how the music element would work in this project. So let me just try to get... It's 7 minutes long. It's a bit long. if you find the film slightly slow, it's on purpose. It's the kind of pace that we wanted to expose. And obviously we had a lot of critique, particularly with people involved in television, which said that this might be a bit too boring. The second part of the lecture, as I said earlier, will involve actually talking and presenting how processions fit these two temporal structures, the time of delay and the Olympic time. The narrator in the film, the person who's writing, only makes it to the games in the opening ceremonies of the Paralympic Games. He's 2 weeks late. He's normally expected on the closing ceremony of the Olympics on the 29th of August. The audience awaits his arrival. He's delayed. A video link finds him in Gibraltar, which is just there. He sets off from Ithaca, this sailor. Despite the fact that the games are coming to a close, someone is still traveling. What is relayed are a series of photos and events of his journey, and these are relayed on the stadium screen. They have these giant television screens. There are a collection of his points that catch his attention. If we look at the voyage as a literary structure or a travelogue, it allows for digression and association. Ideas and images come to you as you progress forward in a journey. This is not a chronological progression of a biography or a historical narrative. One writes down what they encounter. Things come to you, and the traveler becomes a collector. The sailor is delayed because of these encounters. The more he travels, the more he encounters, the more he is diverted. Now, I'm not showing what these collections are because they have not been designed, like a lot of these things in this project. The main reason being was that we're anticipating the a theater director to join us, and he never did because of lack of money. So you have to do with this kind of diagramming of the project, as a parenthesis. Now, what I'm talking about in this collection, this travel as a kind of collection, as you progress, you collect, is very clearly audible, not visible, from the work of the composer Vasilis Kokas, who is a student of Yanis Xenakis, and who had the pleasure of working with in this project. He's a so-called topographical composer. This is what he drew for me the first meeting we had together, and I felt like an idiot. If you recall, each object in the movie has a specific sound. The sound is what identifies the traveling object. Agon is identified by the sound of the drums. These were the two walls. Geometry is identified by the propeller sound of the moving boat. Therapia by the deep vibration of the Aeolian bagpipe. And Eros, the thread from Knossos, is identified by the clarinet. When geometry finally makes it to Athens, one can hear the sound of waves, footsteps, another boat passing by. If a topography is seen as a soundscape, an area filled with sounds, the procession then becomes a picker of the sounds. It's a bit like cherry picking for samples. The procession creates a collection, and a narrative is built through rhythms which are dictated by the pace of the traveling. So again, the temporal scale of the present movement is an ordering mechanism for the collection in the past. So you proceed in the voyage, you collect the sounds, but the rhythm that is added to it is a contemporary rhythm, and it's constantly being composed as the procession moves along. This is what Vasilis wanted to do, that we broadcast to radio stations, and one could identify where the object is by sounds from the surrounding landscape. The second point that I would like to present for the procession is procession and the collective. I'm just reading the procession. The return of the procession or of the torch relay is not a return of a dance that remains in the same place. The procession creates a clearing. The audience awaits for the procession, which passes by, never to return. It's a bit like watching the Tour de France from your balcony. You wait, and just 5 seconds, it's just gone. principle, the runners are very close. It is a fundamental structure that the spectacle moves. The stage is extended, and the only way to participate is to walk. Walking in public, not as vehicular units, to borrow Erving Goffman's phrase, but as a congregation. There is a visible following, an embodied following in the procession. In every single one of the 16 processions, something or someone is governing the pace. A procession may be seen as a public body. Everyone passes the rhythm to another person. One measures their movement with respect to a general flow or pace. It is a form of bodily dialogue, where one body moves in order with a changing situation. Time is given to us collectively, but we're also responsible in part in creating the rhythm. Now, I would like to appropriate the procession with language and present this collective walk, walking as an oral tradition. The epic story relies on itself constantly being told and retold. It is the embodied experience of the person before that passes the story to you. This is an old tradition where you say a story and it passes on. Unlike a real story which aims towards truth, here the words sink in the experience of the storyteller. And so walking collectively is dictated in this very oral way, and particularly in the procession. The time of your step is an embodiment of the person in front of you. And here I use embodiment as an appropriation of the rhythm of other bodies. In walking, time is given to you by another familiar body. The marathon procession is to deliver a logos in the form of a poem to Athens. It is not the news that the Athenians have defeated the Persians, but a contemporary game, an extended Chinese whisper. Now, the procession, the marathon procession, begins obviously in marathon and ends up in the old Olympic Stadium. And this is the actual old route of the initial marathon in 1896, of the renewed marathon. The procession begins in marathon with an actress whispering the first strophe of a poem to a few walkers. It is uttered only once, and it is expected that only a few of the walkers will remember the entirety of the piece. Along the route, there are stops. These are located at the points where the marathon route meets built-up areas, and there are 12 along the way. These are just this red, the little built-up areas that the marathon route, the traditional marathon route, crosses. These stops in the processions project are treated very much like the ones you would find on an actual marathon. Rather than giving you refreshments, they offer you different parts of the poem. More people join in at the stops. The idea is to order the poem in a coherent structure. The slower the pace, the longer the time of composition. This is taking the ordering side of the Chinese whisper. We normally put more emphasis on the destructive side. So the marathon route is, I guess, is one of the most open processions that anyone can join in. And it is made contemporary by the idea that it's a game. You have to deliver this poem to Athens. There's an originary poem told to a few individuals at Marathon. And so you walk along. And they give you other fragments of the poem in these different stops. And collectively, hopefully, you try to appropriate the correct version of the poem. And one person is going to deliver this poem back again in the stadium to the original person that told the story. It's very simple. The object here is just a few words, not necessarily architectural. This strange coincidence between talking and walking perhaps comes from an old situation and deep relationship between language and architecture. The city of Athens assigned Aristotle a plot of land in which stood shrines to Apollo and to the Muses. A covered colonnade led to the temple of Apollo, or perhaps connected the temple with the shrine of the Muses. This colonnade or walk, called peripatos, which still means in modern Greek walk, actually a stroll, gave the school its name. Students wandered to and fro, and it is said that Aristotle himself lectured and taught while walking up and down. This kind of walk is also encountered in Plato in the Phaedrus. It is a meandering. The Phaedrus presents love as an escape, a detachment, a movement, a walk, and it is activated to the actual going away from the city of Plato and Phaedrus. They walk away. Walking and talking are in symbiosis. One feeds and moves the other. Walking for the sake of talking, as in the marathon procession, is a kind of meandering. We move forward, but are constantly trying to order the past. And the past is what is given to us in these refreshment stops, the poems. It's a very simple game. The participants know that they have to walk on to deliver their poem, but at the same time are disorientating in trying to order the origin. It has returned on itself in an ordered shift. What I mean by that is that it has become what it is through a collective restructuring. It bears certain traces of Olympic time. In Olympic time, things never return to the same. There is no repetition as such. So, after all this, what I'm trying to do, which was something which was appreciated by the committee, was rather than showing, just like it was done in the Atlanta Games in 1996, a visible continuity of the past, we're trying to relay the concept of cyclical time through this game, through this poem. The final part which I want to compare is the procession and metaphor. Ancient Greek processions would typically relay an object from one place of origin to the site of the festival. The peplos would, for example, return from Elefsis to Athens in the Panathenaic festival. The modern Greek word for means of transport is metaphora. You use public transport, a bus or trains, metaphora. Something is transported by a metaphor, and the metaphor can be seen as a moving body. The linguistic understanding of metaphor also bears this process of movement. There's a displacement or transference from one object to a completely different concept. This concept of metaphor is visible in the procession that begins in Epidavros, which was the sanctuary of Asclepios, or the god of healing. So what I'm doing is, in all these understandings of processions, I'm putting one example, one route, of how we're trying to read the procession. The object that you saw in the film, which looked like a very bizarre body with a giant trumpet sticking out of it, is called Therapia, which literally means healing. It is an Aeolian bagpipe. Therapia acts as a metaphor in that it transports therapies and performs healing acts along its journey by playing sounds. The point of origin is the theater of Epidavros, which is here. It is seen metaphorically as a funnel in a landscape that concentrates sounds onto Therapia. So initially Therapia sits in the middle of the orchestra at the base of the theater. And through television, one is made to believe that there's a concentration of sounds onto this object, which is then going to transport the sounds and perform healing acts along its way to Athens. Now, the next short clip, and it's much shorter than the one before, is one example of this healing act. And I would say that we were pressured quite a bit into making this scene, I guess, viable in the sense of that the Olympic Committee were going to pay money and they wanted a message to be relayed from it. And the message is about conservation of the environment. Right. So therapy is going to heal the environment. That's a practical sense of it. So let's try. was built in the 19th century. It divides northern and southern Greece. Should we stop it here? Now the actual stitching is carried out by locals, and it's the mechanism is just some pulleys that you just pull, and it's stitched up. It should have remained as a piece of land art, apparently, stitches. Therapia finally ends in the Theater of Dionysius in Athens. Here, an event is taking place in the Theater of Herodes Atticus, which is still currently used for the Athens Festival every summer. Now, why I'm using this concept of procession as a metaphor is because the object begins in Epidavros, which is kind of the healing ground of this healing sanctuary of ancient Greece, and it ends where the temple of Asclepios is found in Athens. So there's a kind of transference. And the transference here is that the theater of Dionysus, which is never used, is in ruins, is going to steal a bit of the show that is happening in the theater of Herodes Atticus. So the object passes in the middle of a performance and carries some of the orchestra with it. Now, I would like to conclude with the following, and I will return to the maskets again, perhaps to really explain what we were trying to do in this project, which was not a show. It was not really a spectacle. It was more of a participation and understanding of the past. Not by revealing the past, but more of, in a sense, trying to portray these two temporal structures that I initialized in the beginning, the time of delay and Olympic time. The designers who won the competition for the mascots, and these were announced last week, or 2 weeks ago, have legitimized their design on the Xoana. They have used history in this legitimacy, that our design is better because it's historical. They submitted a series of ancient dolls, which formally are not too dissimilar to this. Now, what has altered if one sees the old Xoana to these new ones? Is their visibility, their appearance. Their names, however, are contemporary. Athena and Phaedrus are still used as names in modern Greece. Language, and here we use the very narrow sense of language, referring simply to the name of the gods Athena and Phaedrus, is seen as the continuity which acts as the hyphen or the link between the past and the present. Language is contemporary, i.e., after all this time, it still works. Let me use Gadamer to highlight this point, and perhaps you can read this in the marathon route. Linguistic tradition is tradition in the proper sense of the word, i.e. something handed down. It is not just something left over to be investigated and interpreted as a remnant of the past. What has come down to us by way of verbal tradition is not left over, but given to us, told us, whether through direct retelling, in which myth, legend, and custom have their life, or through written tradition, whose signs are, as it were, immediately clear to every reader who can read them. We have seen how language acts as one continuum that links the past to the present, its contemporary. It is like a tool, a hammer that I can pick up from the 18th century and it's still available to me. It works. Can the motile body be seen as another medium of hermeneutic experience, of this contemporaneity? Can it perform the hermeneutic act that Athens 2004 wishes to realize? Walking, like language, has a rhythm of its own. It can sway us into its spirit. Expressions such as a stream of conscience evoke a deep relation between language and passage, and we have already encountered this in the Peripatetics and in the Phaedrus, very briefly. Walking is a gradual movement forward. Here I'm just talking about what the processions are doing. It is a slow displacement. We are not carried by a car or transported by a plane. To understand the past, one does not transpose oneself into that space. One lives in the present. But it is the embodied slow emergence from the past that walking can give us, and particularly its great possibility of delay. When we choose to walk, well, it's a choice. We can go faster. And this is perhaps what I've been trying to say initially in the time of delay. And walking has this capacity to do that. This delay, inherent in the structure of walking, makes it a historical or even an emerging activity. Perhaps it is because we're conscious of the temporality of this movement, that it is a gradual movement, constantly mediated by a moment to the next, step, 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 step. Language has passed through this long oral voyage. It is not the kind of transition that our two mascots have encountered. They were only translated a month ago. They were picked up from a book, and the designer said, well, let's do something with these guys. There is not this sense of continuity that is present in language. And what I'm trying to say, perhaps it is present in walking, and hence the choice of processions for this project as a link to the past. What the project offers is a very simple way of finding another continuity, an oral continuity, which changes with time, but which also embodies time. And this is the walk and the procession. What I mean by that is that language bears the continuity of time. If it has survived as a tool, it bears this continuity. And at the same time, it works in it. The flow of words. And what I'm trying to say is that potentially the same structure works in the procession, in the act of walking, that one moves forward in this kind of very slow pace, but within this kind of temporal structure. That's it. The title of the talk was The Hermeneutic Step.
Can you just explain a little bit more about the four, I don't know if I should call them objects, that Eros and Agon and geometry, and mm-hmm. how you those and sort of what they signify?
Well, yes. I didn't talk too much about that. All the objects have a certain link to the place of origin. What was very important, and this is why I didn't present it tonight, was that this is a very popular festival, and the opening ceremony is apparently seen by 2 billion people. And you don't expect that Logos might be associated with marathon. This guy ran this distance to say that the Athenians were victorious. Nor would you perhaps know of Ariadne's thread in Knossos. Ithaca is geometry, it's a map, the object is a map. There are clear links in every single one. In Mount Athos is an iconostasis that is filled as you proceed. But the important is, and that's what I'm saying about something contemporary, that like in the example of the marathon route, it's a game, it's a play. Everyone can join in without knowing, you know, the history of the actual procession. But yet, one hopes that there is a temporal structure in it, just by the game. So you're not reading history, it's actually a compression of cyclical time and time of delay. I can't say it too simply, it's telling history in the present as a game through these two time structures. Was that clear or? Okay. Yes. Well, it's probably a similar question. It was Eros, and it's purely playing with the idea of Ariadne's thread. And I mean, Ariadne's thread, and Eros is just a name given to it. I mean, potentially one could read them as mascots, these objects. Not that kids would go and buy meters of rope. The mascots are much more exciting. They're more cuddly, I guess. But, yes, sorry.
What comes of these objects after the procession and after they've entered the stadium?
Well, some of them are installed in Athens. Therapia, which is the Aeolian bagpipe, is installed outside the theater of Dionysius, which has recently been pedestrianized, the street in front of the theater, and it just relays the sounds of the concerts in the pedestrian street, for example. I mean, there were extremely... Athens, and how many times have we, in this program, have we talked about Barcelona, 92? But Athens is heavily, heavily conscious of what happened in Barcelona. Unfortunately, everyone can say from now that it's failed to achieve what Barcelona did. Most of the structures are temporal structures, or some people are saying that some events are going to happen in tents. Anyway, Barcelona did this project, invited international sculptors who, in an area by the harbor, installed certain installations. And they coincided with the Olympic Games. And Athens was very keen on that. So when they found this idea that in some of these objects, not the logos, not the poem is gone, happens and it goes, they saw that, yes, they could buy into something that might remain as a trace in the city. Yes. Well, perhaps. It's not only on the. Is your question rooted on the urban scale or on the whole of the organization of the Olympics?
No,
on the urban scale. Interestingly enough, I received an email 2 days ago from a friend who announced to me that there's an international competition now of ephemeral structures that the Olympic Committee is organizing. And artists are invited to submit, this is still available if anyone is interested, to submit their designs for these structures which will be in Athens during the 2 weeks. Why it is failing, I think, I don't think I can answer that. It's it goes beyond the urban scale. It's a political issue. You know, who dictates? There is no Maragall in Athens. There's 60 individuals, and no one can have the final say in something.
Along the lines of the same, along the lines of the question that we just had, is it something in the culture right now in Greece that is preventing it from having a ceremony which was well like the previous one in Barcelona? Is there something specifically holding back?
The creative element?
Yeah. Don't they realize that once they go past 2004, they would have actually missed out on an opportunity? And
I'm sure they do, yes. Well, that's on the point. I think the cultural aspect is going better than others, if we speak of the Olympics as a whole. The areas that are most, let's say, in the danger zone is transport and infrastructure. But the cultural element is going very well, and they've chosen an incredible choreographer as the artistic director, and he was only revealed last week, Dimitris Papaioannou. And he's a very young guy who I think he's going to be a great translator in what I was trying to say about translating today. Not at all. But if I can slightly abuse your question, in Athens as well, a lot of the sport complexes are very far away from each other. And Patra is, for example, used for football, etc., etc. And if I bring it back to this project, they found it extremely pleasing that these processions could be choreographed to visit all these areas. So it was very practical for them as a unifying project because of this spreading around.
I think you said at the beginning that this project had been put on hold as it was. I'm just wondering how, with the choreographer taking over the artistic direction, how likely you think it's going to be that elements of this will end up happening in 2004?
Right. I have no idea, just because I was busy writing this talk, but I would definitely try to get in touch with Mr. Papaioannou. Yes. Because, yes, there is a connection. And he's very aware of the project. I know that he's aware of it.
Have you envisaged how you might make the lessons that could be learned from your wonderful project in terms of how we relate to history not forgotten in the future? I mean, the beauty of a festival is that it recurs every 4 years or whatever, and you can always reenact an idea every 4 years, whereas this could just be a one-off event, which would be a shame. How would you... It relates to her question of how you are going to store the object after.
Mm-hmm. Well. Partly I was trying not to do that. Partly I was, and why this consciousness of cyclical time and representing cyclical time was that the procession was seen as a sort of Olympic festival in two ways, both that it kind of passes by you, it's kind of 14 days, procession is also kind of has a finitude, and also that it's fleeting, that it passes from one space never to return again. And the Olympics always, you know, they do return, but they always return in different places. So I actually saw it differently. I saw it that, you know, good luck to the next guys, I guess.
Thank you very much. Wonderful project.
It's okay.
Thank you very much.
It's okay.